This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Wednesday, December 21st, 2022. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky coming to Washington, D.C., meeting with President Joe Biden at the White House, addressing a joint meeting of Congress. The first time that President Zelensky has left Ukraine since Russia invaded 10 months ago, and with concerns a new Russian military offensive could begin soon. President Zelensky thanking U.S. lawmakers and the ordinary people of America for their support. President Biden saying Ukrainians inspire the world. President Biden also announcing the U.S. will be sending a Patriot missile battery for the first time as part of a new aid package. Coming up, we'll hear from the two leaders and talk about U.S. military aid, what Ukraine wants and what the U.S. is willing to give, with a Politico defense reporter, Paul McCleary. Also today, the U.S. Senate still working on the $1.7 trillion omnibus spending bill to fund the federal government from the end of this week, when current authorization expires, through the full fiscal year, end of September 2023. By the way, that bill has another $45 billion for Ukraine. The House Ways and Means Committee votes to release 6 years of former President Donald Trump's tax returns. House Democrats name a new chair of their campaign committee, Congresswoman Susan DelBene of Washington State. And Pennsylvania politicians remember the NFL great Franco Harris, who has passed away, as much for his volunteer work in the Pittsburgh community as his accomplishments with the Steelers. Associated Press article begins, the Biden administration announced Wednesday that it will provide $1.85 billion in military aid to Ukraine, rolling out funding for a Patriot missile battery as Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky arrived in Washington for his first known trip out of the country since Russia invaded in February. The package includes $1 billion in weapons and equipment from Pentagon stocks, including the Patriot battery for the first time, and $850 million in funding through the Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative. Part of that initiative will be used to fund a satellite communication system, which likely will include the crucial SpaceX Starlink satellite network system owned by Elon Musk. AP article goes on, the Patriot would be the most advanced surface-to-air missile system the West has provided to Ukraine to help repel Russian aerial attacks. After the Ukrainian president came to D.C., he met Joe Biden in the White House Oval Office, the two making some remarks to reporters.
Well, Mr. President, it's good to have you back. I'm delighted that you're able to make the trip to be here, and, it's an honor to be by your side in the united defense against what is a brutal, brutal war being waged by Putin. 300 days, hard to believe, 300 days been going through this, and Putin has waged a brutal assault on the Ukraine's right to exist as a nation and the attack on innocent Ukrainian people for no reason other than to intimidate. And he's escalated his assault on civilians after hitting schools, orphanages, hospitals, landmarks. He's trying to use winter as a weapon. But the Ukrainian people continue to inspire the world. I mean that sincerely. Not just inspire us, but inspire the world with their courage and how they have chose their resilience and resolve for their future. And the American people have stood proudly with them, Democrats and Republicans, together with our allies in Europe, Japan and other places, to make sure you have the financial, humanitarian, and security assistance that is needed. We're going to talk about that today. And we're going to continue to strengthen Ukraine's ability to defend itself, particularly air defense. And that's why we're going to be providing Ukraine with Patriot missile battery and training your forces to be able to accurately use it. Together with our partners, we're also going to continue to impose costs on the Kremlin, and we'll support Ukraine pursuing a just peace. President Zelensky, the United States stands with the brave people in Ukraine. We stand with you, and you've been a great leader. And by the way, we have a famous thing that occurs once a year. We pick the man of the year in Time magazine. You are the man of the year in the United States of America. And so welcome. We have a lot to talk about. And the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. Great honor for me to be here. Dear journalists, I thank you so much for the invitation. I really wanted to come earlier. Mr. President knows about it, but I couldn't do it because the situation was so difficult. And now, if I'm calm, I mean that we control the situation, and because of support, and first of all, because of your support, and I understand that we have very important topics and we'll discuss them, everything, so many challenges in Ukraine, in Europe, in the world, and from energy to situation on battlefield, but I, first of all, I really, all my appreciations from my heart, from the heart of Ukrainians, all Ukrainians, from our nation, strong nations, all the appreciation to you, first of all, Mr. President, for your big support and leadership. Of course, Europe, many countries helped us and are helping now because the war is not over. It's a bit, but anyway, but that is your leadership. Thank you, first of all. Thank you so much, Mr. President. Of course, thanks my partisan support, thanks Congress, and thanks from our just ordinary people to your ordinary people, Americans. I really appreciate. I think it's very difficult to understand what does it mean when we say appreciate, but you really have to feel it. And thank you so much. Great honor to be here. And yesterday I was on Donbass in Bakhmut. That is the place on the east of our country, you know it, all the details. We had so many phone calls and spoke detail about it. And I want to give you something. One guy, he's really a real hero, real captain. And he asked me to pass his award. And he asked me to pass his award to President Biden. And you will understand, he is the captain of HIMARS battery. Yes, he's very brave, and he said, give it to very brave president. And I want to give you that is the cross for military merit. That is one.
Oh, God love you.
Yes, that is from him, and I have the list. He wrote the list. Yes, I didn't read, Mr. President. I can't read. It's not my, it's in Ukrainian language, but here the translation. It's from
him. And his name is, I have his name, I can contact him?
Yes, yes.
Pavlo.
Thank
you. Well, undeserved, but much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
He said that all, many his brothers, this system saved. So, thank you very much.
Well, we have a tradition here, and I will give it to him. My son, who fought in Iraq, they have what they call a command coin. You've seen those coins we have in the battlefield. I will make sure that he gets one of those.
Right. Give me, I will give.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. What a great honor.
Thank you.
Great honor. Well, thank you, press.
Okay, thank you.
With more on Ukrainian President Zelensky's visit to Washington, on the phone now is Paul McCleary, Politico's defense reporter. Thanks so much for being here. You wrote, when President Zelensky lands in Washington, he will come with one of his biggest requests of the U.S. since Russia invaded his country nearly 300 days ago, and he might not get the answer he wants. What is the request, and why might he be disappointed?
Well, the big one is going to be for the ATACMS missiles that are fired by the HIMARS, the this mobile rocket launch system that the United States has given Ukraine. The missiles that HIMARS fires now go about 80 miles. The ATACMS are kind of an advanced version of that can go up to 180, 190 miles. Ukraine has been asking for these for months, and the White House has refused and said that basically they're concerned that the Ukrainians would use these longer-range rockets to hit targets inside Russia, which Ukraine's already been doing with small drones and other things like that, but the United States doesn't want to be responsible for providing those weapons, at least overtly. And Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, even President Biden, has said flatly for months that they're not going to provide the ATACMS, that the Ukrainians can win with the howitzers and the shorter range HIMARS. Ukrainians also want Grey Eagle and Reaper drones, which the United States has used in Iraq and Afghanistan and Somalia and other places for 20 years. These drones can come equipped with Hellfire missiles, would be also surveillance capabilities, which would be hugely helpful in mapping out where the Russian front lines are and attacking even behind those front lines. The Pentagon is still mulling on the Grey Eagle and Reapers. Those might happen just at a later date. My understanding is there's technical issues that we're concerned about if they're shot down. Some of the surveillance equipment on the drone is a little more sensitive. So those aren't going to happen immediately. I know, speaking to some Ukrainian sources yesterday, that Zelensky's going to push for the ATACMS and the drones again during this meeting with Biden. So it'll be on the agenda, but it will not be happening today, at least for the drones.
President mentioning that for the first time, Patriot missiles are going to be sent to Ukraine. Will they make a difference?
They will. I mean, it's only one Patriot battery, which is one system with six launcher tubes. But Patriots are the most advanced missile defense system in the world. I mean, they can take out ballistic and cruise missiles. Coming in, and I imagine it'll be situated somewhere near Kyiv, which will help with the incessant Russian attacks on the capital city, on the critical infrastructure that are causing blackouts in the city, that cutting off the heat and gas supplies and things like that. So it's only one system, but it's incredibly accurate, incredibly powerful, and it'll be a big boost for the Ukrainians in protecting the infrastructure and also symbolically. I mean, because this Patriot has been a system that Ukrainians have asked for since February, since the beginning of the war, and we've said no, and we're finally doing it, which would give them hope that maybe someday the ATACMS might arrive and the Grey Eagles and Reapers might arrive. And it's also, I think, symbolically to Moscow and to Vladimir Putin that the United States isn't afraid to send some of its, big-ticket, highest quality weapons to help the Ukrainians.
We're talking with Paul McCleary from Politico. You also write at your article at Politico.com that both President Biden and President Zelensky want to use this visit to woo Congress. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, there's a 40 as part of the NDAA, the National Defense the Defense Bill that's up on the Hill right now. That's going to vote on in the coming days. There's $45 billion for Ukraine. It's humanitarian aid and defensive aid. It's about $30 billion of that is going to be for defense items, which will fund what the United States has been doing for Ukraine. It should be through the summer, so it'll be most of next year. Some in Congress, especially some of the new Republicans who will be seated next month, are very skeptical of this funding for Ukraine. I mean, it's been tens of billions of dollars since February. And in the time of inflation and then rising national debt, they have an argument to make. But there's been pretty wide bipartisan support. But after this bill, I think it'll be tougher next year because you're going to start running into the presidential election and congressional elections and things like that. I know some members of the Freedom Caucus already are saying that they're not going to show up for the speech tonight, that they don't believe in this funding. They don't believe the U.S. should be sending this much money to Ukraine. So they're going to just not come back to town for the speech.
So yesterday, President Zelensky visits a town in Ukraine on the military front lines in the war with Russia, and today makes his first trip outside of Ukraine since the war began, coming to Washington, D.C. symbolically. What does this mean?
It's pretty huge. I mean, to go from Bakhmut, which has been a scene of savage fighting for months, both Ukrainians and the Russians have lost massive amounts of personnel and equipment and invested a lot in this fight. And for him to go, that was really the closest to the front line where there's still fighting happening that Zelensky has come during the war. And then for him to get on the train, go to the border, get on a U.S. military jet in Poland and fly to the United States is incredibly symbolic. That he'll be addressing Congress. You'll have the photo op of him there. His top advisors are with him. It sends a message to the Europeans as well, which have been behind Ukraine, but there's been a little bit of softening in places like Germany. But it sends a message to them that the Biden administration is on board with the fight in Ukraine, and Biden, has said that we're going to support Ukraine until the war is concluded. And despite some efforts in Biden administration to kind of nudge the Ukrainians toward negotiating with Russia, there's been no calls over the past several days, or from White House officials yesterday or today, for the Ukrainians to negotiate. So having these meetings and this speech without a call to negotiate while pledging to support Ukraine until the fight is over, that's pretty big in itself for Europe and for Russia.
Paul McCleary is a defense reporter with Politico. Find his stories at politico.com, and on Twitter, he's at Paul McCleary. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
President Biden and President Zelensky holding a joint news conference in the White House East Room. One of the questions to President Biden was about what weapons the U.S. is willing and not willing to give to Ukraine.
Olga Kushlenko, One Plus One TV channel. When the full-scale invasion started, U.S. officials said that Ukraine cannot receive Patriots because, as you said, it might be unnecessary escalation. And now it is happening. Right now, today, it is happening. And now Ukraine desperately needs more capabilities, including long-range missiles attackams. Maybe I sound naive, but can we make a long story short and give Ukraine all capabilities it needs and liberate all territories rather sooner than later? Thank you.
Well, his answer is yes.
I agree.
Let me be straightforward with you here. Look, the fact is that it's important to remember that before Russia invaded, we dedicated an enormous amount of security assistance to Ukraine. And we've given Ukraine what they needed, when they needed to defend themselves. And since the invasion, that has resulted in more than $20 billion in terms of security assistance. Just today, I approved another $1.8 billion in additional assistance to Ukraine for it to succeed on the battlefield. And we're focused on working with allies and partners to generate capability in four key areas. Air defense, as we know today, the Patriot is the best of that. Secondly is to, and we're looking to do more, we provided hundreds of advanced artillery systems and from dozens of countries. Thirdly, we've worked with partners to get Ukraine tanks and other armored vehicles. And fourthly, we've announced today another 200,000 rounds of additional ammunition. Now you say, why don't we just give Ukraine everything there is to give? Well, for two reasons. One, there's an entire alliance that is critical to stay with Ukraine. And the idea that we would give Ukraine material that is fundamentally different than is already going there would have a prospect of breaking up NATO and breaking up the European Union and the rest of the world. We're going to give Ukraine what it needs to be able to defend itself, to be able to succeed and succeed in the battlefield. And The other piece of this is, you may recall, one of the reasons why I have spent, well, I won't tell you the calculation, but I've spent several hundred hours face to face with our European allies and the heads of state of those countries, and making the case as to why it was overwhelming in their interest that they continue to support Ukraine. They understand it fully, but they're not looking to go to war with Russia. They're not looking for a third world war. And they think they can all be avoided by making sure that Ukraine is able to succeed in the battlefield. So anyway, there's more to say, but I probably already said too much.
President Joe Biden in the White House East Room with the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. C-SPAN covered the full news conference. You can find the video at cspan.org. Russian President Vladimir Putin today calling the fighting in Ukraine a tragedy, but vowing to continue until Russia's goals are met. President Putin speaking at a year-end meeting with Russian defense officials, and the Russian defense minister, Sergei Shoigu, announcing plans to increase Russia's military strength from 1 million personnel to 1.5 million. Ukrainian President Zelensky will be speaking tonight in Washington to a joint meeting of Congress. On the Senate floor today, the Majority Leader Chuck Schumer talking about that speech and also new aid for Ukraine in the omnibus spending bill for the U.S. government the Senate is debating, and also a nomination related to Russia.
Well, Mr. President, I see you. You are in your Ukrainian yellow and blue, as am I. And that's appropriate because this will be a day to remember in the history of the United States Congress when we welcome President Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine. This is President Zelensky's first trip outside Ukraine since the beginning of Russia's invasion. The president of this young democracy will address members from both chambers in a joint meeting of Congress. It's always a high honor to welcome a foreign head of state to Congress, but it's nearly unheard of to hear from a leader who is fighting for his life, fighting for his country's survival, and fighting to preserve the very idea of democracy. It shows the importance President Zelensky places on us continuing to give him robust help. Where Winston Churchill stood generations ago, so too President Zelensky stands, not just as a president, but also as an ambassador of freedom itself. Where Winston Churchill, let me just say that again because it's so important. Where Winston Churchill stood generations ago, so too will President Zelensky stand here today, not just as a president, but as an ambassador of freedom itself. President Zelensky could not arrive at a more crucial moment for the Senate. We're not only voting to approve more emergency wartime funding, but today, here in the Senate, we will also vote to confirm the U.S. Ambassador to Russia, Lynn Tracy, who will be tasked with standing up to Putin. We should complete our work on both. We should complete our work on both the omnibus with Ukrainian aid and the confirmation of our new ambassador to Russia very quickly. Now, Mr. President, I hope all House Republicans will attend the Zelensky address this evening. And when they do, they should listen to President Zelensky describe the horror his people have endured at the hands of Vladimir Putin. I hope that Donald Trump's friendship with Putin is not motivating House Republicans to turn a blind eye to Ukraine's suffering and desperate need for help. Because the so-called friendship between Putin and Trump was a sour relationship that was deeply damaging to our country and to the international order.
The Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat from New York, on the Senate floor. The Senate did go on to confirm Lynn Tracy, currently U.S. Ambassador to Armenia, as the new U.S. Ambassador to Russia. The vote was 93-2. The two no's were Republicans Rand Paul of Kentucky and Mike Lee of Utah. And Senator Schumer mentioning Winston Churchill. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi writing in the invitation for the Ukrainian president to address the joint session. This is a moment fraught with meaning for me. My father, Congressman Thomas D'Alessandro Jr., was a member of the House in 1941 when Winston Churchill came to the Congress on the day after Christmas to enlist our nation's support in the fight against tyranny in Europe. 81 years later this week, it is particularly poignant for me to be present when another heroic leader addresses the Congress in a time of war and with democracy itself on the line. Back to the Senate floor, the Minority Leader Mitch McConnell also talking about the visit by the Ukrainian president and the joint meeting of Congress speech and U.S. aid to Ukraine. Senator McConnell saying the Republicans advocated for more money than President Biden asked for and are committed to making sure the money is spent properly.
Continuing our support for Ukraine is morally right, but it's not only that. It's also a direct investment in cold, hard American interests. That's why Republicans rejected the Biden administration's original request for Ukraine assistance, because it was insufficient. The administration's initial plan assumed there would be a lull in fighting over the winter, and so the disbursement rates of weapons would actually decrease. But hoping for the best cannot mean that we fail to prepare for the worst. Rather than slowing assistance, we should be speeding up international deliveries to Ukraine to help them take back more territory and better prepare for whenever they need, wherever they next go on their offensive. So Republicans pushed hard here in the Senate to increase the amount of security assistance in this bill. I'm glad our Democratic colleagues came around. The agreement on the table increases weapons purchases to support Ukraine beyond the president's request. This assistance is in our national security interest, but it is also in America's economic interest. These investments will help expand our defense manufacturing capacity and contribute to an industry that supports high-paying American jobs. The money is tied to strong oversight requirements to ensure that America's investments reach only the intended targets. There has been meaningful oversight over our Ukraine assistance all along the way, including by three separate inspectors general and the Government Accountability Office. And if on top of that, last week's NDAA will put in place even further expansions in oversight, more in-use monitoring, and stricter reporting requirements. And, Mr. President, the oversight won't stop there. Just as Senate ranking members have worked hard to maximize the impact of our assistance, the incoming House Republican majority will be able to use their gavels to keep an even closer eye on Ukraine aid and make sure the Biden administration is doing everything possible to rebuild our defense industrial base.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky, today on the Senate floor. He was one of the Republican senators who voted yes Tuesday night to begin debate on the overall $1.7 trillion omnibus spending bill for the federal government. The vote was 70 to 25, 21 Republicans joining the Democrats. On Wall Street today, the Dow up 526, NASDAQ up 162, S&P up 56. An update on immigration policy. CNN reports the Biden administration told the Supreme Court Tuesday that the justices should reject an emergency bid by a group of GOP-led states to keep the controversial Trump-era border restriction known as Title 42 in effect while legal challenges play out. But it also asked for the court to delay the ending of Title 42 until at least December 27th, citing ongoing preparations for an influx of migrants and the upcoming holiday weekend. The administration said that the states, led by Arizona, do not have the legal right to challenge a federal district court opinion that had vacated the program and ordered its termination by Wednesday. Chief Justice John Roberts temporarily froze that deadline on Monday and asked the parties involved in the lawsuit, Justice Department and ACLU, to weigh in until the Supreme Court issues an order, which can come at any time, although the court has no deadline. The authority will remain in place. That from CNN. Today, Senator James Lankford, Republican from Oklahoma, saying at a news conference he'll try to get the Senate to pass a couple of immigration reform bills.
Right now, we have about 3,600 people a day that are being released into the country. 3,600 people a day. ICE is actually deporting 189 people a day. That is day after day after day. And when people talk about what is the crisis that's happening across the country, it is this administration that's facilitating the rapid release of people into the country and is ignoring the ICE responsibility of actually people leaving the country. I'm going to give a Christmas gift to the administration later today. I'm bringing two different bills to the floor and asking unanimous consent. One of them deals with the Title 42 authority. The administration already, when a court stepped in and said, we're not ready for this, asked for a week's extension of that, and now even in the filing that was done yesterday by the administration, they said, no, we're still not ready. Can you give us more time on this? I'd like to give them a longer extension of time and to keep that same authority in place on it. That pandemic authority is being used for multiple other programs, but this administration saying, we don't want to actually do border enforcement, but we do want to do other areas. We want to maintain that same authority that's there. The second thing is the administration continues to talk about the asylum rules, and they seem to be playing with this issue that's out there of if people travel to multiple different countries and then they finally get to the United States and request asylum, that's not asylum, that's economic opportunity. And I'm all in. We are the greatest nation in the world. I completely understand why people want to legally come to the United States. But right now this administration is encouraging people to literally travel from all over the world to illegally come to the United States. So the simple process that is, if you're traveling to multiple different countries before you come here and you didn't request asylum in that process before you came here in any of the previous countries, you can't request it here as well. It's not new. That idea has been around for a very long time, and it's time we actually implement that kind of idea, that we continue to allow asylum seekers to be able to come to this country that are truly seeking asylum, but for people that are actually just coming for economic opportunity, I understand why they would want to come. Let's go through the legal pathways to be able to do that as well.
Senator James Lankford, Republican from Oklahoma, at a news conference in Washington with other Senate Republicans discussing immigration and Title 42. The U.S. Solicitor General Elizabeth Prelogar, in papers filed with the Supreme Court on Tuesday over Chief Justice John Roberts' putting a hold on ending Title 42, she writes, the government recognizes that the end of the Title 42 orders will likely lead to disruption and a temporary increase in unlawful border crossings. The government in no way seeks to minimize the seriousness of that problem, but the solution to that immigration problem cannot be to extend indefinitely a public health measure that all now acknowledge has outlived its public health justification. Washington Today continues in a moment.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Welcome back to Washington Today, available as a podcast on the C-SPAN Now mobile app and wherever you get your podcasts. 6 weeks after the midterm elections, which saw House Republicans win enough seats to take the majority from the House Democrats, House Democrats are already looking to Election Day 2024 to try to take it back. Today, the incoming House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York introducing the new chair of the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, Susan DelBene of Washington State. Seattle Times reports that the chair of the DCCC leads candidate recruitment, fundraising, and organizing for the primary campaign arm for the House Democrats. The chair also determines which races get national money, putting them in the sometimes uncomfortable position of deciding which of their colleagues to help and which to abandon. The chair is the fourth-ranking House Democrat after the minority leader, whip, and caucus chair. That from the Seattle Times. Congresswoman DelBene holding a news conference, or speaking at the news conference in Washington with Leader Jeffries.
We knew going into this most recent election cycle that we were facing strong historical headwinds. In the end, however, Democrats held back this Republican red wave. This means Republicans will have an unworkable majority. We're already seeing that. But it puts Democrats in striking districts in a very strong position to take back the gavel in 2024. And that's thanks to the work of so many, thanks to work of members from folks across the country, and including thanks to the leadership of Sean Patrick Maloney, who really focused us on delivering for families and delivering for our communities. And that's very much in sharp contrast to what Republicans have been focused on, which have been grievances from the 2020 election and extreme rhetoric. I don't know how any of their messages help families who are struggling. It just doesn't. Republicans are not only widely out of touch with the American public, but they've been a danger to our democracy. And despite a stronger than expected showing on our part, our work isn't finished until this gentleman standing next to me is holding the speaker's gavel. So I plan to work with our new leadership team and all corners of our caucus to get us there. It's a team effort. I believe strongly in making sure we build strong teams. This is a team effort. The strength of our caucus is our diversity of voices, of backgrounds, and resources. And we have one clear and united goal. We're going out not only to defend our current seats, but also to expand our map and to take back the majority. We're going to do this because the American people agree with us. They want government to work for them, and they want to make sure that we're solving the problems that our country faces. They don't want chaos. They don't want infighting, all the things they see from the other side. We can make a difference, and we can make this happen. I want to thank again, Hakeem, for putting your faith in me here.
Congresswoman Susan DelBene, Democrat from Washington State, the new chair of the DCCC Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, at a Capitol Hill news conference today with Hakeem Jeffries, the next House Democratic leader. She mentioned Congressman Sean Patrick Baloney, Democrat from New York, who chaired the DCCC through the 2022 elections. As Democrats lost fewer House races than many anticipated, but he lost his own bid for re-election. Well, Republicans enter the next Congress in a couple of weeks with a majority of just 5 seats. One of the new Republican seats is George Santos of New York's 3rd District. He won by 8 percentage points in a district that President Biden carried during the presidential election in 2020. But a New York Times article this week questions whether several parts of George Santos's biography were fabricated, including that he graduated from Baruch College and worked for Goldman Sachs and Citigroup and started an animal rescue charity. And at today's House Democratic news conference, Hakeem Jeffries asked about the controversy.
From my standpoint, at this moment, we need answers from George Santos. He appears to be a complete and utter fraud. His whole life story made up. And he's going to have to answer that question. Did you perpetrate a fraud on the voters of the 3rd Congressional District in New York? Right now, George Santos appears to be in the witness protection program. No one can find him. He's hiding from legitimate questions that his constituents are asking about his education, about his so-called charity, about his work experience, about his criminal entanglement in Brazil, about every aspect, it appears, of his life. It's also apparent to me that George Santos has perpetrated a fraud in terms of his views on delivering for the people of Nassau County. He pretended to be a moderate on the campaign trail. We know that is not true. He's consistently played footsie with white supremacists, election deniers, and those who seek to overturn our democracy. And so we'll see what happens on January 3rd. It's an open question to me as to whether this is the type of individual that the incoming majority should welcome to Congress. That's a question for Kevin McCarthy at this point in time.
Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat from New York, incoming House Democratic leader. An attorney for George Santos issuing a statement. It is no surprise that Congressman-elect Santos has enemies at the New York Times who are attempting to smear his good name with these defamatory allegations. The House Ways and Means Committee voted Tuesday night to release 6 years of tax returns by former President Donald Trump and his businesses. The committee obtained those returns from the IRS, part of an investigation into the agency's mandatory audit program for sitting presidents. The committee vote to release the documents was party line, 24-16, Democrats voting yes, Republicans voting no. After that vote, the committee leaders spoke to the press. First, here's the chair, Democrat Richard Neal of Massachusetts, who says the investigation found that the IRS did not audit former President Trump in 2017 and 18.
For all practical purposes, the research that was done as it relates to the mandatory audit program was non-existent. The tax forms were really never audited, and only my sending a letter at one point prompted sort of a rearview mirror response. I emphasize again that the mandatory program, as highlighted in what you will likely get in the next few minutes or so, it was almost non-existent. And my point is that that was the legislative purpose with which we won 4 federal court decisions in 3 courts. We argued for an examination of how the audit process played out.
Congressman Richard Neal, Democrat, chair of the Ways and Means Committee, speaking with reporters Tuesday night. The committee ranking Republican Kevin Brady of Texas spoke at his own news conference about that vote of the committee to release former President Trump's tax returns.
Regrettably, the deed is done. Over our objections in opposition, Democrats in the Ways and Means Committee have unleashed a dangerous new political weapon that overturns decades of privacy protections for average taxpayers. The era of political targeting and of Congress's enemies list is back. And every American taxpayer who may get on the wrong side of the majority in Congress is now at risk. And our worry is that this will launch a dangerous new era, a new political background, or frankly, politics gets more divisive, more painful, and I think more disheartening. What was clear today, I will invite my colleagues to comment, but what was clear today is that public disclosure of President Trump's private tax returns has nothing to do with the stated purpose of reviewing the IRS presidential audit process.
Congressman Kevin Brady, Republican, ranking member on the Ways and Means Committee, speaking to reporters Tuesday night. The committee saying that former President Trump's tax documents are expected to be released in a couple of days following redactions of personal information. Reports from the Ways and Means Committee about the IRS's presidential audit program and the Joint Committee on Taxation on the content of the tax returns, that's already been released. And they show that former President Trump paid no federal income tax in 2017 and 2020, and that most of his income over the years is interest on investments, his real estate and other businesses showing losses. House Republicans who were to be on the Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, that is until Speaker Pelosi vetoed 2 of the appointments, and then the Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy withdrew all of the appointments. Those Republicans releasing their own report today, some of what the report calls key findings, widespread concern from Democrat leadership, they use that word Democrat, over optics in the aftermath of summer 2020 Black Lives Matter protests prevented early deployment of the National Guard. The House Sergeant-at-Arms was compromised by politics in the lead-up to and on January 6, 2021, and did not adequately prepare the Capitol for possible violence. And the U.S. Capitol Police leadership did not give officers the appropriate training necessary to prepare them to protect the Capitol from violence. The House January 6th Committee, the official Select Committee, plans to release its final report on Thursday. The House today moving to pass the Equal Pay for Team USA Act. It would require all U.S. athletes in global amateur competitions to get equal compensation and benefits in their sports, regardless of gender, also equal medical care, travel, and expenses. The Senate passed legislation by voice vote earlier this month. Speaking on the House floor today, Congresswoman Mikey Sherrill, Democrat from New Jersey.
In support of the bipartisan Equal Pay for Team USA Act to ensure that female athletes on Team USA may finally receive the equal compensation and benefits they have long deserved. Earlier this year, we saw the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team successfully fight for equal pay between the men's and women's teams. It's now time for Congress to act and provide the same level of equality for all women competing on behalf of the United States globally. That's why my colleague and I, Congresswoman Nancy Mace of South Carolina, led a bipartisan group of members sending a letter to House leadership urging them to bring this bill to the House floor for a vote before the end of the 117th Congress. I thank Senators Capito and Cantwell for introducing this important legislation, and I urge my colleagues to vote yes on the Equal Pay for Team USA Act.
Congresswoman Mikey Sherrill, Democrat from New Jersey, on the House floor. House debated this bill today, plans to take a recorded vote to pass it sometime this week. And as mentioned, the Senate already passed it. So if the House does, and it is expected to, the bill will go to President Biden to be signed into law. Pennsylvania politicians remembering Franco Harris, the Hall of Fame running back for the NFL Pittsburgh Steelers, who has died at the age of 72. Governor Tom Wolf, a Democrat, tweeting Franco was a Steelers legend on and off the field, sending condolences to his family and all who knew him. Senator-elect John Fetterman, a Democrat, tweeting Harris was a selfless man who was an icon on and off the field. And on the House floor today in Washington, Republican Congressman John Joyce.
I rise today to recognize the life of Franco Harris, a giant in the football community. Franco Harris committed his life to excellence. He ran for 12,000 yards and won 4 Super Bowls with the Pittsburgh Steelers, giving hope and inspiration to a community. On Sunday, the Steelers were preparing to recognize Franco's contribution 50 years after the play that's remembered as one of the greatest of all time, the Immaculate Reception. To remember him only for his legacy on the field would be a disservice. Franco Harris was committed to servicing and supporting food banks, blood drives, youth sports leagues that run throughout central and western Pennsylvania. Franco Harris loved the city of Pittsburgh, and he loved his alma mater of Penn State. He attended events throughout Pennsylvania, and he never gave the impression of being a Super Bowl MVP. He never gave the impression of being a first ballot Hall of Famer. Franco Harris gave the impression of simply being a man from his community, a proud Penn Stater, and a proud member of the Pittsburgh Steelers Nation. Today, we remember the life of Franco Harris, and we wish that we'd had that opportunity to honor him in person on this Sunday. The success that Franco Harris brought to the Pittsburgh Steelers carried a fan base far and wide. The success allowed the entire United States to become in one gleaming moment a Steelers nation.
Congressman John Joyce, Republican from Pennsylvania, today on the House floor. Franco Harris passing away at the age of 72. He campaigned, Franco Harris did, for Joe Biden when Joe Biden was running for president in 2020. President Biden today with a statement, say the name Franco Harris and most everyone talks about the catch, the Super Bowls, and the glory he brought to the game of football. But in the 50 years we bonded as friends, I always talked about the character and compassion. President Biden going on, it was this week 50 years ago when my first wife and infant daughter were killed and my 2 young sons were badly injured in a car accident while they were out getting a Christmas tree. I had just been elected to the U.S. Senate and was in Washington when I got the call and rushed home to Delaware. I rarely left my boys' bedside until they got better, but one day I did go shopping for them. When I returned, they were smiling for the first time since the accident. Art Rooney, the generous and honorable owner of the Steelers, had flown out a couple of players, including Franco, and the tough as nails, Rocky Blyer. Busy with their own lives, they took the time to be with my boys, sign footballs, and then left with no publicity. A small act of kindness that meant the world to us. That statement from President Biden. Thanks for listening to Washington Today. Sign up for C-SPAN's evening newsletter word for word to get the stories Washington is talking about sent to your inbox every day. You can subscribe at c-span.org/connect. Have a good night.